Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering a new piece from the Isabel Voices Choir called Creation.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Kicking off 2025 city budget deliberations on Monday, January 20th, Kingston City Council spent a large portion of their first meeting reckoning with a pitched 13.74% budget increase from Kingston Police. In a presentation to council, Kingston Police proposed a $54,053,627 budget for 2025, a total increase of over $6 million from 2024. A large portion of the increase, as explained by Chief of Police Scott Frazier in his presentation before council, is due to newly settled collective agreements. The previous collective agreement expired in 2022, and a new agreement was recently ratified. This 2025 budget includes negotiated wage adjustments and benefit enhancements and retroactive payments for 2023 and 2024. Non-discretionary items like salaries and benefits represent over 86% of the total expenditure budget for Kingston Police, making up 9.9% of the 13.74% increase. Chief Frazier explained some of the process behind the collective agreements and the importance of bringing Kingston Police on par with the rest of the province.
We need to be attractive for other people. Now when an experienced officer wants to relocate to Kingston, they call us and ask for our benefits book. And literally this budget, 9.9% of this budget is literally lifting benefits to a level that would be similar to around the province. And because we didn't do that year over year for years, it's a heavy lift. When you look at experienced officer retention and new recruits, there's a lot of people looking into a lot more things now. So being competitive, being attractive, having salaries that are similar. This is my third police service. I'm in Kingston in 35 years. So I can tell you, the job is the same, whether you're in Vancouver where I started, or whether you're in Brockville, or whether you're in Kingston, the job is the same. What people are doing now is maximizing their life benefits. Is it work-life balance, which we didn't see 10 years ago. You came to work and you went to work. That's what it's all about. So it's all of these things, especially in this new collective agreement. It's literally picking that up to show people that, hey, we're competitive.
Other items adding strain to the budget included enhancing police presence in the downtown core and meeting long-term absence backfill requirements. This was a notable item, with 31 of Kingston's 219 officers currently non-deployable and unlikely to return to their positions in the near future, according to Frazier. Meeting the new provincial mandates for the Community Safety and Policing Act, which came into effect on April 1, 2024, also contributed to the increase, with requirements including additional training, equipment upgrades, uniform modifications, and more administrative expenses. After the presentation, councillors had many questions for the Kingston Police team. Councillor Connie Glenn asked if Kingstonians will see noticeable improvements in service. Frazier had the following response.
We used to be, I guess, what you maybe classify as a larger community, but kind of a small town. People know people, and there wasn't the type of crime that we're seeing now. Now we're a smaller city with big city problems and big city issues, and the big city people coming to Kingston to commit their crimes. And we have a policy in prioritizing our responses. I don't want to make a promise to everybody that, hey, if we have 23 more bodies over the next 2 years, when you phone, we'll be at your driveway before you hang up. It's just, we can't promise that. But what I can promise is that we'll be in a better position to be able to respond to the growing needs of our community. And I think at the end of the day, that's where, we're going to be able to really make a difference.
The Kingston Police budget increase single-handedly contributes to 2.5% of the total 5.3% property tax increase for Kingstonians this year. Councillor Ryan Boehm asked the question lingering in the background of the conversation.
What would you say to the Kingston taxpayers, you know, when they look at this budget and they open up their tax bill? The quality of service is not going to increase. The whole goal here is to maintain and look better. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, and I think what we're doing is looking down the road, going, we know that the numbers we have off, if they're not coming back to work, then we need to really look and go, okay, how are we going to increase our capacity? How are we going to increase our response times? Everything we do this year is going to affect next year and the year after. And in 3 more years, they're going to be back to the table doing collective bargaining. And I think it's really important. We had to do a heavy lift. And when you're doing a heavy lift, when you're taking benefits that were probably the worst in the province and trying to get to the best in the province, I would rather do that like one bite at a time instead of trying to do it all at once. But that's what we're doing. And no slight on anyone. It's just where we're at. I thought we need to come and be honest. And I think this is a very honest budget. And I'm, you know, standing before council at 13%+. I'm not happy to be standing here at that percentage. But I think if we don't do it this year, we're doing it next year. And if we don't do it next year, we're doing it the year after. So let's try and level it. Let's make it sustainable. Let's cut out all these big pressure increases. If we can get to something that we can say, hey, you know, I can't say that 10 people won't book off next year, but I'm very hopeful we won't have that. And then we're looking and we've got an honest approach to the next 5 years of policing. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, I'm very comfortable with it. And I know I'm a taxpayer here as well. It's not going to be easy. It is a tough pill to swallow. And I know that people aren't calling me saying, hey, I wish we had less police officers, as we got everybody around this table. You're asking, everybody wants more.
Smaller increases are forecasted in the coming years, with projected increases of 8% in 2026, 4% in 2027, and 3% in 2028. Councillor Boehm captured the feeling expressed by most councillors in his closing remarks.
Yeah, I'm going to dub this budget from the police, the Buckley's budget. It definitely tastes awful, but I sure hope it works and stabilizes things.
The 2025 Kingston Police budget was approved along with the rest of the city's budget items in their final meeting on Wednesday, January 22nd. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Gananoque's new Mobile Crisis Response Team.
Thank you, Jesse. The Gananoque Police Service will get $94,007 to strengthen its ability to respond to mental health emergencies as the Ontario government funds mobile crisis response teams. The Ontario government is investing over $450,000 into four of the teams, including one in Gananoque. Other funding allocations include $109,852 for the Brockville Police Service, $120,125 for the Leeds County, Ontario Provincial Police, and $128,818 for the Grenville OPP. Mobile crisis response teams bring police officers and crisis workers together to respond to complex situations involving mental health or addictions concerns. These teams assess whether individuals in crisis require emergency medical care and connect them to appropriate community supports. Brockville Police Chief Mark Noonan said that the city force is now putting its new mobile crisis response team together, working with Brockville General Hospital. Noonan says he hopes the new team will be up and running by the summer. Meanwhile, in Gananoque, the town police force is also planning to raise funds for a good cause. On February 17th at 11:30 a.m., emergency service partners will brave the icy St. Lawrence River to raise funds for local Special Olympics Ontario athletes. The public's donations, cheers, and support are all welcomed. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with a report from LJI reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forstell, that provides a recap of the first meeting of the newly formed Southeast Health Unit.
Thank you, Dinah. The newly merged Southeast Health Unit's Board of Health recently held its first meeting since its vote to amalgamate on January 1, 2025, and there was much business to attend to. The meeting began with an address from the board chair, introductions of the new representatives, and eventually got into the nitty-gritty details of policy and procedure. The meeting demonstrated that there is much work to do to solidify the new health unit. Key goals include reducing health inequities, improving service delivery, and enhancing public confidence in public health. Board Chair, Hastings County Mayor Jan O'Neill, emphasized the importance of governance, transparency, and collaboration. O'Neill also emphasized the importance of relying on the communications team to answer public inquiries to ensure consolidated messaging. Each of the 18 board members then introduced themselves and talked a bit about what they hope to focus on as a board. Specific issues discussed included homelessness, mental health, and the need for practical service delivery and administrative efficiencies. Many echoed Belleville Councillor Sean Kelly, who noted that he had a goal to see that public health became a stronger voice for municipalities with the challenges of public health, whether it's homelessness, food insecurity, or mental health. Other items discussed included the proposed Board of Health meeting schedule, Finance Committee membership and draft terms of reference, budget planning assumptions, Governance Committee membership and draft terms of reference, and a meeting schedule for Finance and Governance Committees. Board of Health meetings for the Southeast Health Unit will be held on the fourth Wednesday of each month, and the locations will rotate between Kingston, Brockville, and Belleville.
And thank you to Michelle Dory Forstel for that story. Now over to LJI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a report about an upcoming external assessment of Loyalist Township vehicles.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township Council approved staff using $25,000 from the Fleet and Equipment Reserve Fund to assess the condition of the township's fleet of vehicles. Council approved staff to seek an external consultant for a detailed review of the township's fleet condition and needs, as well as a replacement strategy and an evaluation of their leasing system. Along with a review of existing systems, processes, and policies, staff will be looking into fleet modernization as well. They'll be considering green alternatives for future replacements and additions. Staff plan to use the results of the study as a planning and guidance tool going forward. Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend describes the importance of getting the study underway.
I think this is timely and good to do. I mean, having just gone through budget processes, a lot of what the public sees are the fleet that we have on the road, and there's always comments about that. And I think this will serve us to have have a strategic approach to our fleet.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn noted the importance of a new strategy going forward.
I'm glad to see this coming forward. We have looked at different strategies. We've tried some, and now it's a good time to find out what's working and what's not, and where we should go in the future. I think it's very prudent planning.
The study would also review the pilot enterprise vehicle leasing program to determine if it should continue in its current form. This program includes 13 light-duty vehicles. Director of Community and Customer Services Lori McFarland describes how the data from the survey will help them going forward.
It'll be a look at what's happening right now. It'll feed into the asset management plan, but as part of it, it'll be recommending different strategies for replacement, and we'll incorporate that into the asset management plan and how we move forward.
This work was determined to be a priority for early this year because the data is required for the township to start preparing for its long-range financial plan and 2025 updated asset management plan. Project funding was not included in the 2025 budget as it was originally due to be completed in the last quarter of 2024. Due to competing priorities and reduced staffing levels, this did not occur. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Next is the local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about the allocation of funding to make repairs to County Road 49.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM News 5 days a week, 6 times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
You You just heard the sounds of driving down County Road 49 in Prince Edward County, and one wonders what damage is being done to the vehicle as you bounce along one of the worst roads in Ontario, if not Canada. Prince Edward County has lobbied the government for decades, requesting financial help to rehabilitate the road, and last Friday, Tyler Alsop, MPP for the Bay of Quinte, made a surprise visit to the county, announcing a grant of just under $20 million to help the rehabilitation cause. The funding is coming from the Housing Enabling Core Servicing Fund, and with a rehabilitated road, enables more than 2,000 housing units to be built over the next 10 to 15 years. The road is the main access into the county from eastern Ontario, with daily use by commercial, industrial, tourism, hospitality, and employment traffic. It is also the main route for emergency services to transport patients to larger healthcare facilities. The county is ready to put shovels in the ground and hopes the grant will nudge the feds for support. MPP Alsop delivers the good news.
For as long as I can remember, the county has been selling visitation and life in a community with the natural attraction of beautiful beaches and lush agricultural soil. It's built a reputation for artisanship and culinary creativity. We're seeing new growth, particularly in areas like Wellington and Picton. The latest census data showed a net increase of in-migration over out-migration and a growth rate of 3.9%. While Prince Edward County has long outpaced the provincial average for seniors, the trends show young families are moving here now too. It's not surprising then that staff here at Shire Hall have been kept busy with new subdivision applications, and they've been working to find the best ways to ensure there is servicing capacity to meet that interest in development. Just down the street, ground is broken on a $200 million state-of-the-art new hospital made out of mass timber to continue the fine legacy of care that attracts families and businesses here to Prince Edward County. I'm also pleased to see the local progress on affordable housing as the province's homelessness prevention program supported an impressive partnership at Leeward House, and as the county continues to make use of the former Queen Elizabeth land, which I know is a priority for Mayor Ferguson. Still, we've heard from you, Mayor Ferguson, and from our shared constituents, that we haven't been able to really make a dent on Highway 49. The weather and wear has contributed to many potholes, a bumpy ride, and certainly a lot of negative publicity over the years. Well, today we are formally coming to the table to fix County Road 49. I'm pleased to announce that through the Housing Enabling Core Services stream, Ontario will be providing Prince Edward County $19.993 million to support rehabilitation efforts. This funding will support surface reconstruction and help the county to leverage additional funding sources. It is estimated this project will enable the creation of 2,191 housing units, primarily on the east side of Picton, within 10 to 15 years. Thank you for sharing this exciting news with me today. And with that, I'll turn the podium back to you, Your Worship, to share some reflections.
Mayors and councillors going back many, many years have lobbied for support rehabilitating County Road 49. They all traveled up and down the road many times with ministers and their staff. On various occasions, our former MPP, Todd Smith, conducted many of those rides, so ministers Jeff Urick, Carolyn Mulroney, King of Sirma, and Pradmeet Sakaria, to name just a few, got to experience firsthand the deplorable condition of County Road 49. At one point in the early 2000s, the municipality went so far as to try to return the road to the province because of the cost to maintain it. County officials wrote letters, made phone calls, sent emails, and traveled to Toronto on many occasions to plead their case. And I want to acknowledge all their hard work over the years, but it has finally paid off. We are one step closer to fixing one of the worst roads in the province thanks to the outstanding support of the Government of Ontario through the Housing Enabling Core Servicing funding stream. The rehabilitation project will enable more than 2,000 housing units on the east side of Picton over the next 10 to 15 years. County Road 49 also serves as a vital transportation route for the municipality's tourism, hospitality, and employment sectors, not to mention emergency services that use it to help those in need at our current and new hospital and long-term care home. The road experiences average daily volumes of approximately 6,000 vehicles, with peak traffic occurring during morning and evening rush hours, such as they are in Prince Edward County. This includes commercial and industrial traffic, with heavy trucks accounting for about 5% of the total traffic. But we know that the work does not stop today. It is vital that the federal government join with the county and the province to financially support this project, which is essential for the continued economic growth, safety, and well-being of our community. We have this project shovel ready thanks to the financial support of county taxpayers and the diligent work of municipal staff. We are ready to begin the work. We've done everything we can to move this project forward, and people want it fixed, whether they be permanent residents, visitors, or new or prospective businesses. The government of Ontario has joined us at the table, and we're most grateful. Now we need the government of Canada to step up, to come to the party, and help us get County Road 49 off CAA's worst roads list once and for all. And we will utilize every tool, resource, and provincial and federal contact available to us to ensure that that happens.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over now to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFW and Cobourg, Dan Jones, with a story about the outstanding legacy of the Five Counties Children's Center.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Cobourg, Ontario. Five Counties Children's Center is marking 50 years of helping children with physical and developmental challenges. From humble beginnings in 1975 in Peterborough, assisting 125 children in year one, to expanding locations north of Peterborough and into Northumberland County, the agency served more than 6,100 clients in 2024. CEO Scott Pepin says while the agency is turning 50, the real success for him are the achievements of each client over the past five decades.
Five Counties Children's Center, we're turning 50 years old this year, and we're really wanting to celebrate the 50 years of work that the organization has done, the lives we've touched, and really the kids and the strides that they've made throughout all this time. And a lot of those kids are now adults, and we thought it would be a great opportunity to highlight some of the successes that have happened along the way.
Now, I would imagine there's a lot of successes, not only for the organization growing, but the success of, more importantly, of the children and clients that have been involved in that. I understand there's a person named Mike who has given a testimonial about how influential Five Counties has been. What does that tell you about the service and what you guys are doing when you hear positive testimonials like that?
Excellent, because you don't realize the impact. You see them when they're little, and you'll be able to read Mike's story on our website. And now Mike is a grown adult, and he's just having a tremendous impact in his community. And he attributes some of that success, that initial kind of love of sports, to beginning at Five Counties Children's Center. And so it's amazing to kind of meet these adults and seeing the role this organization played in their lives.
Now, obviously, 50 years is a long time. There's some evolution, not only for your organization, but technology and medicine and science going forward. What are some of the largest changes you've seen either in the industry or within your own organization during this growth?
Well, I think one of the biggest ones is realizing the potential of children. I think back in 1975, it was just to, you know, it was provide the services locally and provide the supports for kids to, you know, just make ends meet. And now it's really a very positive environment where we look for the children to thrive and be the best people they can. Whatever the exceptionalities they may have, they can grow up to be anything they want, and we really try to encourage that despite some of the challenges they may be existing. And then just the volume as well. So when we started off, I think it was around 100 kids the first year, and now we're at 6,200 kids. And we've grown not just from the Peterborough site, but we've got our sites in Cobourg and Campbellford and Lindsay and Halliburton and Minden. So we're able to bring these services closer to home. And we've grown from just a couple of speech paths and occupational therapists to a multidisciplinary team with over 150 staff members.
So then where do you go from here now? 50 years, let's say another 25 years. What are your plans to continue that growth?
It's to stay on the cutting edge. Working with the need is still great. Our goal is try to meet that need. You know, we still have lots of kids who are waiting for services, and sometimes they have to wait longer than they should. Really, there shouldn't be a wait. We should be able to meet the kids' needs as they become apparent. So our goal at Five Counties, and it always has been, is to get the kids in, seen as soon as possible, because the earlier we can begin treatment, the better the outcomes are. We also have desires to be able to grow the organization. As you can imagine, in our Peterborough site right now, we built this building in 1975, and we're bursting at the seams. And so we need to look at other opportunities in which we can grow and kind of create the Five Counties for the next 50 years.
Yeah, no, it sounds like you have a good problem on your hands to solve, at least in trying to meet demand out there in the communities. In terms of the celebrations that will be taking place this year at each site, what are we looking at?
So I'm really excited for our first one is going to be in Cobourg, and we're going to be doing a ribbon cutting of our new therapeutic backyard, which has been it's coming along wonderfully. We've had incredible support from the community. There's a lot of fun exercises and equipment that kids are going to be able to use in that backyard. We've got bike paths, wheelchair swings, and tons of other great items where we're going to be able to do therapy with kids. So the community has been amazing helping support us. We've also received the Ontario Trillium Grant. MCCSS has also helped fund it, as well as many donations. So we're really excited for this spring. We don't have the date picked down yet, just yet, but it will be this spring, and we'll be cutting the ribbon there and inviting everybody to come see the new space. We're also going to be doing our backyard summer social in our Peterborough location. We're going to have a cookout in our Lindsay location and a few other things in our Campbellford, Halliburton, Minden community. And each month, we're going to feature a story about someone who was pivotal in Five Counties development. And sometimes it'll be our kids, sometimes it'll be some of our staff. We have staff here who have been working, I think the highest right now is 43 years, so almost the entire time of Five Counties. So there's a lot of people here who have the entire history of the organization, and just some really, really cool things to look back on as we get ready to celebrate what we plan on doing in the future.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, February 6th, we'll see a daytime high of 1 degree with a 60% chance of snow throughout the day, dropping down to minus 8 overnight. Friday, February 7th, daytime high of minus 5, mix of sun and cloud, and a 30% chance of flurries. Saturday, February 8th, going to be a little bit colder with a daytime high of minus 5, but an overnight low of minus 14. Sunday, February 9th, we're going to see slightly warmer weather, daytime high of minus 1, overnight low of minus 9, with a 60% chance of snow flurries. And Monday, February 10th, we are going to see a daytime high of minus 3, a mix of sun and cloud during the day, and it's going to drop down to minus 12 overnight.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.